Welcome back to the Humans of Agriculture podcast. We're continuing on. We've found a New Zealand winner of the Xander McDonald Award, Nancy Crawshaw. Welcome. It's good to have you here.
Thanks. Good to be here, Ollie.
Now, Nancy, I guess I really only got to know you a little bit at the Impact Summit, so I'm looking forward to finding out a little bit more about your background, who you are. You're the Extension Officer for Angus Australia. I think you probably travel a lot, given that when I text you, I was in New Zealand a couple of days after the conference and you're already back in Australia. And then you're like, no, if you want to get in touch with me, you might have to follow me on my New Zealand number. But you did something. And so in Australia, we do acknowledgements of country, which I'm sure because you've spent a lot of time working here, know all about. I'm joining the podcast from Wadawurrung country where we have our office. But you did what I presume I'm going to try and get the pronunciation right, a pepiha, which was actually incredible. And I loved it how you...
Pretty close.
Oh, we'll take that one then. I loved it how you connected the country, the land, the places, I guess, you're from. So would you be up for doing it to kick things off?
Sure can. All right. Ko Mama Kaitimanga, ko Nuhaka Te Awa, ko Kahanganu Te Marae, ko Crawshaw Tuku Whānau, and ko Nancy Takuingwa. So what I've said there is Mangokai is my mountain, Nuhaka is my river. Kahangunu is my marae, which is like a meeting place. Ko Crawshaw Tuku Whānau, that means Crawshaw is my family, and my name is Nancy. So the way I was sort of taught is in the Māori culture, when you introduce yourself, it's all about your connection to the land, the natural resource, which is more important than yourself. So it's always your landmark, which is your mountain, your river, because that's such a big source of food. And it's all about how well you look after those natural resources is actually more important than you as an individual, because what we also look at is kaitiakitanga, which is we're looking after the land for future generations. So we're not going to be here forever, but the land is. So as guardians of the land, how well we look after the land and our natural resources, that's more of a reflection of who we are as people rather than what our name is.
I love it. You know, after I spent a bit of time in New Zealand a couple of years ago, when it came to what Humans of Ag stands for, I took that whole multi-generational piece, like how does what we do impact our children's children? And so I'd love to know, like, how do you see that connection and maybe the takeaways from Maori culture, and how do you see it in the lens of kind of agriculture and the work that you're trying to do?
Yeah, well, I'd say probably the easiest way to look at for me is sort of looking at our own property. So sort of we'd be third generation where we are, but then my family had other property in a different area before they located to where we are. And that's every, like you're going around the property and what granddad did in his time, that still has impacts on us today, even though he's no longer with us. And you can see when mum did it, every single different paddock she's been to, that something happened and she sort of planted a tree. And it's always a native tree, like a pahutakawa, which is what we call the New Zealand Christmas tree. And so you've seen those when you were kids starting out as a little seedling to now that's one massive tree. And it's just sort of those things, is those little steps each generation's taking, the care they're taking for that land and what they're doing, that affects each generation. It's going to continue going down generations or whoever the next people are on the land. So I just think that's a really cool way to look at it, is in we can think about what we're doing now and today on farm, and we do look at that as in, say, we're trying to work out what my live weight gain is or what my crop yield is, but what we're actually doing to that soil, to that natural environment, how is that going to impact the generations to come once we're long gone.
And you talk a little bit about your family. Can you tell me a little bit more about, like, what were those early influences in agriculture? And did you know from a young age that it was the industry you wanted to be in?
Yeah, I'd say it was sunk in pretty quick when we were kids. Because I remember one of the earliest ones was me and my brother was sorting up cows for the bull. And because you've got little, in a stud, you've usually got a small mobs that are going to different bulls. It was one of those ones we were walking down the road behind a mob of cows and calves and just having a chat. And then for some reason, us still being in primary school, decided to talk about succession. And we're just sort of bouncing around different ideas of how that could work. And then we also got my sister as well, who was there at the time. But it was something we knew we were very privileged to have the opportunities we do and to be able to have access to the land that we do through all our parents' hard work. And it's sort of something we look at as we're actually pretty lucky just to be here. And it's something that we've seen the amount of work that our parents and grandparents have done just to protect the land, just to be able to be financially viable some years as well. So it's just understanding what's gone into it is something you really want to protect. because they've done all the work. You don't want their hard work and life's projects to go to waste.
It's a funny one, isn't it, with succession? I feel like we could go down a whole rabbit hole talking about that. But I'd be interested, like, your interest and roles kind of outside the farm gate. You studied ag science, I believe. How did the work outside the farm gate come about, and why has it been important? And is it where you see yourself kind of being forever, like this straddling piece between the farm side and, I guess, agribusiness roles?
Yeah, so for us, Mum made it very clear very early on, as soon as she worked out us kids were a bit interested in ag, is we had to get off farm and go do something else, whether it was work for someone else or actually get out and see what's out there beyond the farm gate. So that was something we all knew. We had to go and forge our own career, whether we wanted to come back to the farm or not, but we had to go and do something to build up that career so you had some outside exposure. So that was probably the key one, where it was working on that. And for me, it was my big eye-opener was actually when I was over at Colorado State University. So I did a semester over there as part of study abroad. And I'd sort of gone from about 8 hours of meat science lectures at Lincoln Uni to going over there, taking a capstone paper on meat science, having no idea what that was. And for those that don't know, that's where you do 4 years worth of work in one summary paper or course. So that was a bit of an information overload, but it was actually fascinating for me because for us, we's from a seed stock business and just a normal sheep and beef enterprise, you spend so much time trying to breed cattle, breed sheep, and to produce a good product. Yet once that product left the farm gate, what do we actually know about that next stage in the supply chain? Because we are producing food for people to eat, and we do so much work to try and create the best product. Yet our knowledge as producers sometimes isn't that great in terms of the abattoirs and actually producing feeds and what the restaurants want. So I just found that a really good eye-opener, and that was just the way we are sort of, when I was in Colorado, I picked up pretty quick that getting across and doing something in the meat side of things, especially being from a Gen X background, would be pretty useful.
And that's the pathway you've pursued both in New Zealand and Australia?
Yeah, so I sort of, straight after uni, I went over to Aussie doing a graduate program with Teeth at Narracourt plant, and that was thinking I'd go there for 12 months, learn a bit, dip my toes, and then I'd be back home stirring up the old man and just somewhere a bit closer so you could actually be useful on the weekends when you had some free time. But then it sort of came to be where I got offered a QA manager role, which I sort of ummed and ahed over for a while. But then I eventually said yes to, which would easily be one of the best things I've done, because although it's a difficult role where you're under a lot of pressure, the amount you learn from doing a role like that is incredible. And it's like the people and the friends you made in that network and how much they've supported me. Like, that's the whole Aussie family I've got now from my time there, with kettle highs to kettle lows to a lovely COVID outbreak.
Why'd you um and ah?
Probably because I knew the QA manager role was a huge responsibility. Like, when I stepped into it, I'd only been 23 when I went into that role. And, like, having that mass amount of responsibility, having to manage people and pretty much, if that product's not fit for human consumption and you sell that product in that role, you could have to go to court and be legally liable for that. So that was like, it's a lot of pressure to be aware of all that sort of thing. And it was just one of those ones where if I was going to do the job, I'm someone that if I want to do something, I want to do it 100%. I don't want to sort of be a foot in both camps. I'm either going to have that buy-in. So it just took a wee bit for me to sort of go through that process to realise this is something I want to have a crack at. And the big thing there was actually getting the right people around you. Like, I was pretty lucky that our general manager Sage, our plant manager at the time, Dean Woosner, and then our asset manager Sam Logan, like, they were literally my support network. So, like, it's one of those ones where you walk in, never been a manager before, you're going to make a lot of mistakes. But the biggest thing for me was if I can own those mistakes and do that with the team so they know I'm having to make mistakes, and yes, I'm not going to be perfect, so I don't know how to do things, that we could sort of try and put a buy-in. And then having that sort of group around me that sort of you could go to for advice and sort of support and mentor you through that was huge.
Can you talk me through a little bit, like, I'm interested, so having the managers kind of above you, but also that freedom and nearly autonomy to run it as your own, but then also fail, like, how did they come in and around you, or did they let you, I guess, I'm trying to think like in an analogy, like try and paddle, do a bit of dog paddle, keep that head above water without letting you kind of bob under, but just so you could feel and kind of problem solve yourself.
Yeah, that was one of my favourite things about the role was really the problem solving and the people management. And it was one where early days, like I wouldn't do any big call that had anything to do with product without having sort of the general manager's support. So it'd be sort of like you're going through, righto, this is our problem. This is what I'm thinking. This is why I'm thinking it. And you'll just run it past someone to get that idea. So you actually knew we're on the same page, because you could easily miss something. And all these guys with 20 plus years of experience in the meat industry, they've been around a lot longer. And it's actually not a weakness to run, ask for help or to run things past them, because they've been through a lot of things. So a lot of the time just bouncing those ideas around worked really well. And then probably over time it got to the stage where things would happen and you'd just be like, right, I've got under control. This is what I'm doing. And they'd just be like, yep, that's great. So it was definitely one where everyone knows as a new manager, you're not going to be perfect and you're going to make some mistakes. And the biggest thing there is about if I made a mistake, it wasn't, shit, what can I do to cover this up so I don't get in trouble? It was more like, righto, let's go explain it. This is what I've done. This is what I'm trying to do about it. What do you think? Because through that, you're owning the mistake, but you're also bouncing ideas around, because your way of solving it might not be the best way. So if you can get someone else's ideas around and just run it past someone, that's actually better outcome for everyone involved.
Yeah, for sure. No, absolutely. In that role, you probably had one of your proudest career moments that I know you talked about a little bit, but talk us through what it was like stepping into one, a role that you probably like, which you say was daunting, but then two, quality assurance in a meat plant into a COVID pandemic where demand was through the roof. What was it like?
It was constantly changing. Like, so things were changing every day. Like, as we all know, for that COVID pandemic, the information you were getting, what was advised to do, was changing frequently. And that was happening at the same level on a plant level. But our biggest thing was people still need feeding. So it was sort of like, what can you do to make sure we're still functioning, we're still viable, and people are getting product that they want? But the biggest thing for me in that whole process was sort of, it was even a little bit before then, is like, actually, when you give the team the sort of ability to make mistakes and them flourish, that's where you actually get more gain. So like for me, in a QA manager role, you'll have KPIs, you need to meet audit results and all that sort of side of it, as well as your reporting country requirements. And all of those are really important. Like, you need to hit those to make sure you're producing a good product. And through that process, people are going to make mistakes, but it's about making sure whatever the product that gets released, is it the best quality it can be? And for me, it was when you sort of train people up and give them the tools to succeed in their own roles, actually seeing them succeed and go to levels they didn't think was possible was a lot more rewarding than the audit results, because getting your audit with no corrective action, just 100%, that's great. But actually seeing those other guys succeed for me was a lot more valuable and a lot more rewarding, and especially to the point now where that some of them have stepped into higher roles or senior leadership roles since I've left. Like, it's just cool being able to see those guys just grow and flourish.
Yeah, that's so good.
Hi, I'm Pia, horticulture and sugar analyst at Rabobank, and I'm here to share our latest insights on Australia's vegetable market. Did you know in 2023, Australia produced over $5.8 billion worth of vegetables, though only 4.3% of this was exported? Like many other countries, the Australian vegetable industry relies mostly on its domestic market. In fact, only 7% of global vegetables produced are traded between countries. But we are starting to see that trend change. Global trade is growing at a faster rate than production, and countries with low-cost production are seeing the highest growth rates. You can learn more about trends in the vegetable market on our latest Rabo Research Australia podcast, Mapping World Vegetable Trade, or reach out to me via the Rabobank Australia social media channels to learn more.
So how hard was it then to move, to leave Tees, leave Narracourt, and move on to your next role?
Definitely wasn't easy, because the thing over there, I was pretty lucky that you sort of create an Australian family. Like, through COVID, through all of those sort of different things that happened and being away from home, you missed your family events. Like, my brother, he had his first kid who was older than a year old before I even met her with the COVID pandemic. Like, Christmas, birthdays, Easter, all of that sort of stuff happened. And I was very lucky that I had a family that just completely took me under their wing. And it was Christmas, I was there, you always had something on, like they just took you in like you were one of their own. And so that was like one of the hardest things about it, because these guys have become your family. But then it was also with that QA team, like you were so invested in those people and seeing them succeed. Saying goodbye definitely wasn't easy. And it was one of the toughest decisions I've made, because I ummed and ahmed over it for a while. But I always knew long term I wanted to be back in New Zealand. So it was one of those things where it took me a while to come to the decision. And I knew it was the right decision, because for those guys to move forward, I felt like the QA team needed someone else to take charge, to take them to the next level. Because for me, it was sort of like, you've been doing it for a few years now, and you just, there wasn't as many challenges coming in. So I was like, for these guys, I didn't want to block someone else progressing. So by me stepping aside and going and doing something else, no, it wasn't easy and it was a very difficult decision, but that's allowed other people to grow and progress. And all those people that I was really close with there, I still talk to today. So it was sort of a necessary change, but not an easy one.
And it also has created other opportunities for you, like your extension officer role now and other things. Let's talk about the Xander Summit. What were maybe some of the takeaways or things that really made the highlight and the week for you, aside from winning?
I think for me, it was how powerful that network is. Like going into the summit, I was extremely happy that I'd been a finalist, because in my eyes, if you make that finalist level and you get to that network, I thought that was already winning. So, and I don't want to put pressure on, be like, you've got to win. Whereas you get to that point and you've already got a really big win. And I think you go in there and it's up to you to make those connections. And really, once you're in that room, it's up to you what you make of it. So like you can build those connections, build that network, and then actually reach out to these people and go and see them. So like since the summit, I've already been talking to 3 or 4 people about just different things, bouncing around ideas, and even trying to work out in my work trips when I can take some time off to go and see them on those travel plans I do. But I think that network you've got is just invaluable, because when you get the right people around you to bounce ideas around to encourage you, and also for me, I think a big one's actually not just to say great, great idea, it's actually to challenge you, because when you're challenged, that's when you actually really go to the next level. And I think that's where that network's so valuable, because everyone's on the same playing field, whether you're a CEO or you're one of the finalists, and everyone's happy to have those open, transparent discussions where you're actually going to get a lot out of it. And it's up to you how much you build on those connections after the event to keep growing and to keep learning things. And all these guys are just so open and transparent and actually want you to come and visit them and talk about their business. So I think that part's just really powerful.
For sure. Now, let's talk on the mentoring side. What is it that you're looking to focus on? What's something that you're really kind of have in your corner that you're looking to learn and lean on these people for?
Probably at the moment what I'm sort of thinking is the people side of things. Like we look in agriculture, and if we can get the best people into agriculture, look after them and train them and develop them, I think that's better off for the industry as a whole. Because the way I sort of look at it is on farm, we've got, say, shepherds, I've got the whole process, or Jiller or Jackaroos in Australia. They've got the process. They know exactly what to do to train a dog. If something goes wrong, how to deal with that. Whereas you look at, in terms of managing people, how do we actually deal with these problems? Like we get a lot of people promoted to different roles in farming businesses or even in service industries without any exposure to that people management side of things. And if we can actually develop the people side and ensure people are set up to succeed managing people and we look after them, I think that's actually going to benefit agricultural industry as a whole and all the different sections we have.
Yeah, for sure. It was so interesting this morning. I was looking at this. There's a group over here in Australia and they asked year 11 and 12 students. So you could choose up multiple options, but what were the pathways people wanted to pursue kind of after school? Medical science and medicine was top. Sport was like 8% of respondents wanted to do that. But then when you look at ag was kind of down the list at like 4% of people. But that's still quite a bit of when people can choose multiple options. What's interestingly like above us in that list was mining for people, this group that did the research, they had one mining company commit $3 million to them over 3 years to run and create content to make students more aware of the different career pathways that were available to them in the mining industry. And it's like, in an ag lens, I think exactly as you're saying, there's very little investment or networks for people to kind of like peer learn. And there's just such a huge opportunity for it in our sector, like just in terms of people actually seeing what's possible and what are the careers in ag. But then once you're in it as well, making sure that you kind of feel supported outside of your just day-to-day as well.
Yeah, because I think that's definitely one of our downfalls is we're probably not getting enough people from that outside of ag background in agriculture. And part of that is, like, before I went into the meatwork side of things, I had no idea about any of those career paths that existed in agriculture. Yeah, that's a huge industry, but just where I was growing up in agriculture, I just hadn't been exposed to it. So before I went to Colorado, I hadn't even considered it. And then now that you're more involved in industry, you see all those different career paths and service providers and everything. Well, you know, you went to school with people who studied different things, say microbiology or food science at uni, but they're still not looking at career path in ag, whereas that's where it could really add value. Because you think of ag, you think a lot of those sort of urban people sort of look at it as like getting hands on the ground, a bit dirty where we are. And whereas there's actually so many opportunities and career paths where you can actually have the good income, have a good work-life balance, it's just we're probably not promoting it enough.
Yeah. What are your, like on that career side of things, what are your career aspirations for what you want to do?
That's a good question. I get asked that one a lot.
So you should have a good answer.
Yeah, well, I haven't got that one nailed yet. That's still a work in progress. But long term, I do want to have some involvement in the family business. But then also for me, and I'll talk to my brother about it a fair bit, is we're both quite interested in staying involved in industry. So actually being able to be involved outside the farm gate to really help the agricultural industry out as a whole. How that exactly looks, I'm not 100% sure at the moment, but I am definitely leaning towards how can we help the people side of things in agriculture. So if I can find somewhere where I can touch on that and still be involved in the family business, I think that's could be where I'm going. It's what I'm thinking at the moment. But as I'm sure you've experienced as well, where you think you're going to where you end up can change a little bit as well. So I like to keep an open mind.
Yeah, well, I'm excited to see what happens, Nancy. It's going to be awesome. And more interestingly, I think in the short term, looking forward to following your mentoring trip. And I think the topic you're looking at, we might have to get you back a couple of times to chat about it and see what you're learning and taking away and where you think maybe some of the opportunities and even maybe some of the blind spots we've got as well. As an industry, it'd be fascinating to see what you get away from it.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It's going to be a great trip. I haven't worked out the ins and outs yet, but I'm sure we're going to learn a lot. It's going to be eye-opening. I can't wait.
Absolutely. Now, Nancy, thank you so much for coming on for a yarn and congratulations and good luck this year.
Thanks, Ollie. It's been great to be here.
Well, that's it for another episode from us here at Humans of Agriculture. We hope you're enjoying these podcasts and, well, if you're not, let us know. Hit us up at hello@humansofagriculture.com. Get in touch with any guest recommendations, topics, or things you'd like us to talk and get curious about. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it with a friend. Rate, subscribe, review it. Any feedback is absolutely awesome and we really do welcome it. So look after yourselves, stay safe, stay sane. We'll see you next time. See ya.